Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported, nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now. You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Hello from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic.
Linda and I like to kick off the episode with a question for each other. What's the best thing you ate in the past week?
So apparently Sunday was hashtag National Ice Cream Day. You know, one of those random food holidays that, like, I don't know.
I saw a lot of ice cream posts.
Yeah, which, like, fun fact, this coming Thursday is National, like, Sunday Ice Cream Sunday Day, so it's, like, apparently different.
Wow.
Anyways,
that's like a lot of excuses to eat ice cream.
Exactly. I love all of these random, you know, food holidays because it just, like, drives you to eat great stuff. And so on Sunday, I stopped by Oddfellows Ice Cream in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and got their Sprinkles ice cream flavor, which is just bomb. And then they have, like, a ton of different crazy flavors, like miso peanut butter and, like, black sesame. So I really recommend it for folks who want to, like, try something new with their ice cream. What about you, Iris?
So I finally got to try a place in Hong Kong that has been on my list for a while, and that is Le Petit Saigon. It's sort of like a smaller banh mi little sister of the restaurant Le Garçon Saigon. And, yeah, the banh mi was really good. I realized it's been a really long time since I've had a good banh mi. Like, all the ingredients were great. The bread was great, which really makes a huge difference. So, that was scrumptious.
That's awesome. Well, shout out to pre-Heritage Radio Network episode on banh mi, which you can check out also on feastmeetswest.com.
Yeah. But back to today's show. As you know, here on Feast Meets West, we love talking about popular trending dishes. But part of what we want to achieve is to also shed light on Asian foods and cuisines that don't quite get the attention they deserve. We're really excited to have the opportunity to talk about a fairly well-known Asian food, sticky rice, but through the lens of a lesser-known Asian cuisine, Lao food. So sticky rice, or glutinous rice, is a type of rice that's grown mainly in Southeast Asia and East Asia. It's called this because it's sticky when cooked due to its very low amylose content, which is one of the components that make up starch. We also want to point out that despite being called glutinous rice, it does not contain gluten. We most commonly associate it with Thai cuisine in the West, but it's actually a staple of Lao cuisine and is not eaten everywhere in Thailand.
So, in the studio with me today, to share her knowledge of sticky rice and Lao cuisine is Chef Sang Long Lat. She was born in Laos and fled the country during the Vietnam War, and she learned to cook during her stay at a Thailand refugee camp. In 2009, at the age of 40, she decided to pursue her greatest passion, which is cooking. She took over Bangkok Garden in 2010, which is a Thai restaurant in Virginia, where she slowly incorporated her own Lao dishes into the menu. In 2014, she opened Deep Cow, a Lao restaurant in Columbia Heights in D.C., and where Chef Sang is leading the Lao food movement. Hashtag. Deep Cow has been named one of the top 50 restaurants in the U.S. by Bon Appetit magazine and Michelin Bib Gourmand in 2016. Chef Sang was also named the Eater Awards 2015 Chef of the Year and 2017 James Beard Award semifinalist for Best Chef Mid-Atlantic category. Welcome to the show, Chef Sang.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Chef Sang is going to tell us a little more about Lao cuisine and sticky rice. But for listeners who are unfamiliar with the country, it's important to understand where Laos is and a little bit about its history. So it's a landlocked country in Southeast Asia that borders Thailand, Myanmar, China, Vietnam, and Cambodia. The area that makes up present-day Laos has gone through a lot of changes over the centuries. From the 1300s to the 1700s, it was part of one of the largest kingdoms in Southeast Asia, which then broke off into three separate kingdoms. In 1893, it fell under French rule. It briefly gained independence in 1945 after Japanese occupation, and then went back to French rule, and then was granted autonomy in 1949. Laos then became independent in 1953 with a constitutional monarchy, which was ended after a long civil war in 1975. Laos then became a one-party socialist republic. So yeah, a lot of changes. You might think that you've never had Lao food before, but you actually very well may have. Many Thai restaurants in the States are actually run by Lao owners because Thai food is easier to sell. Also, some dishes we associate with Thai cuisine, like lap, papaya salad, and of course today's topic, sticky rice, are Lao dishes.
Yeah, that's right. So before we chat about sticky rice and other Lao dishes specifically, Chef Sang, we would love to hear about your incredible journey to becoming a chef. So you were born in Laos, but had to flee the country. I'm sure that was a crazy and challenging experience for your family. Mm-hmm. How old were you when all that happened?
I left Laos in 1981. I was 12 years old, left with my mom and two of my siblings. End up in refugee camp in 1981 in Nong Khai. Mm-hmm. And then we got moved to another city in Thailand as well. Through all these times, I have to help my mom out, mm-hmm. you know, cooking. And again, when we moved to Philippines, it's again, it's part of my job is help my mom cooking.
Yeah, that's really crazy. And so you learned to cook at some of these Thailand refugee camps. Who did you learn to cook from while you were there?
Originally, I learned from my grandmother at the beginning at early age, between 7 to 9 years old. My first lesson was cooking sticky rice. When we were in Thailand, I was learning from my neighbors. And most of my neighbors are from different part of Laos. So mm-hmm. it was quite a learning experience to learn Lao food, not just only from the region where I was from. It's also from, you know, other parts, like from the northern part and the mm-hmm. southern part. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Did you then grow up eating a combination of Lao and Thai cuisine or mostly Lao cuisine?
I grew up eating mostly Lao cuisine mm-hmm. until we are in refugee camps, and also when we are in America, we start eating, you know, pad thai, drunken noodle, red curry, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so in your earlier age, you were kind of cooking to support your family and, you know, for survival. And what inspired you to then pick up cooking again later in life?
I always love to cook. It's part of it is my mom. She encouraged me to cook. We came to America. She has to work two jobs. So it's kind of inspiring, pushed me to be a better cook, living, you know, in a household mm-hmm. where my brothers are, you know, boys of the house, and their assignment is not, you know, I'm an older sister. Mm-hmm. So my mom would say, you know, your part of your job is coming home from school and cook. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of, you know, watching. I did watch a lot of, you know, back days, you know, Yan Can Cook and Julia Child PBS. So it's kind of inspired me more to see, you know, back then, you know, to see all these chefs out there cooking. So throughout this experience that, you know, I become in love with that. And, you know, and cooking Lao food is also, you know, like I grew up eating and I was thinking in my mind, it's like when we travel, there's no Lao restaurants out there. So we have to cook, you know, in order for us to, you know, satisfy our craving for Lao food.
Right. And as you entered your adult life, you didn't immediately enter cooking as a profession.
No, I cook a lot for my families, for, you know, my friends, and I did catering at homes. And I always thinking to myself, you know, I got so many, you know, into a few business and I wasn't have passion to it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't happy. I was miserable until my husband gave me time off to figure out what I want to do in life. And I said, you know what? I always go back to when we first got married 20 something years ago. I said, you know, I always want to be in food business.
Yeah.
So he allowed me to stay home during those couple years. I did a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know what? I'm ready for opening a restaurant. And, you know, I had actually been in contact with many different chefs to ask them, you know, if I allowed to be in the kitchen learning from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that never happens. And being a house cook, and I said, you know what, let's just take a risk. So we did. The only way I can do it in order for me to survive, that's what I was thinking, that I have to take over a restaurant that is already been established in this way that I can.
That's a good strategy.
Yeah. So I took over and I learned from, you know, cooking there for a month. And I told myself, you know what, I'm ready for it.
Yeah,
so I did.
And that was that the Bangkok Golden?
Yeah, that was Bangkok Golden. That was in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So without experience at all from a house cook to a restaurant tour, I pretty much have to taught myself. So I teach myself from, you know, starting learning how to turn on the dishwasher to, how to cut certain vegetables and certain techniques. And yeah, so I pretty much learning, teaching myself, you know, how to, you know, get my way up there. So yeah, so
That's great. That's really inspiring to people who kind of want to pursue their passions after they've done something already. It's totally possible, like you said, with, you know, that hands-on experience.
Yes.
That's really cool. So what does Deep Cow mean, and what's the concept at your restaurant?
Deep Cow mean sticky rice basket. It's the serving basket. We steam and we put in Deep Cow. It's made out of bamboo. So that's how we store our rice in there.
Got it. Is it because it adapts... It works well with the stickiness, so the rice isn't.
Yes, and it's very meaningful for Lao culture. So I decided to name the restaurant Deep Cow.
Got it. Is there any other like symbolic meaning to like the little baskets and how sticky rice is presented?
Yes, it's meant to be shared. So the Deep Cow, the basket, it's meant to be shared. So if you go to a Lao household, we'll have one big sticky rice basket, Deep Cow, on the table. So people just passing around and you eat with your hands. You put your hands in there and grab some rice from the basket from Deep Cow.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm going to jump and talk about sticky rice with you first. I read somewhere that Lao people refer to themselves as children or descendants of sticky rice. Is that true?
It's true. Oh. We call ourselves Lu Kao Niao, which means sticky rice children.
Oh, wow. So yeah. Is it because it's eaten a ton?
Yes, because it's our staple meal. It's very important part of Lao culture. Sticky rice is one of the dish. One of the thing that I was taught from my grandmother is, it's so sacred. Even learning how to soak it, learning how to steam it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important. And also it's staple. It's our staple meal. It's we embrace it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And do you eat it for all meals?
We eat for all meals. It could be just a basket of sticky rice and a dipping sauce. It could be a whole meal. Yes.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And so can you name some of your favorite preparations with sticky rice?
Well, some of the preparation that I love to do with sticky rice is I use leftover sticky rice to dry. Mm-hmm. Usually I will, you know, let it sit out in the sun, dry it when I was back in the, as a home cook. And I would, when I'm ready to prepare it as a meal, I will fry it, mm-hmm. Which is called khao khob. So I would fry it, and then I will make my favorite childhood dish, which is called mieng mung luang. So I grew up eating that as a snack or as a meal, and I just loved it. So actually serving that yesterday at James Beard.
Yes. Oh, how fun. And can you use it in, like, desserts too?
Yeah, so I use the sticky rice not just only, you know, traditional eating it as, you know, with the meal or as a dessert, mm-hmm. we call khao khob. I also like to use it to top my tam mong hung, which is mm-hmm. papaya salad. I top with different dessert we serve in the restaurant to give a little bit crunch to it, a texture to the dessert.
Oh, cool.
I also add it into some of our noodle dishes, khao soi. Mm-hmm. And I just love eating it. And sometimes I would just, you know, eating as a snack just by itself.
That's so great. It sounds super versatile. So for customers you see who are, say, eating sticky rice for the first time at your restaurant, how do they react?
They loved it. At first, they are not sure how to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I trained my staff to teach them how to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So we encourage our you know, guests to use their hand to eat sticky rice.
Yeah.
Grab sticky rice from the basket and roll it into a ball bite side and mm-hmm. use that to dip in the meal we are serving. You know, so we encourage people to eat with, this is what our Lao culture, we do, we eat sticky rice with our hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it sounds so just like special and fun as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think people enjoy sticky rice so much?
People love it so much. I think the texture, the texture of the sticky rice. And also it's fun to eat it,
mm-hmm.
you know, using your hand and roll into a ball. So it's fun to eat it. It's the flavor. Yeah, the texture. I would say the people enjoying it, the texture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a fun snack. Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. What better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. Chef Tsang, let's talk about Lao cuisine in general, too. Could you please describe some, like, key attributes of the cuisine for our listeners?
Lao cuisine is it's quite different. Again, we go back to sticky rice. Sticky rice is our staple. We are using a lot of fermented fish.
Mm.
It's funkier. It's spicy. We use a lot of badak, which is a fermented fish sauce,
mm-hmm.
Or we call it a unfiltered fish sauce. And also we use a lot of herbs, fresh herbs. We love eating fresh herb with pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. We embrace it so much. So, and also we are eat with our hands.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't have to be sticky rice.
Yeah.
So we eat anything with our hands except soup and noodle, of course.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned like funky flavors. And you mentioned also like the fermented fish. Mm-hmm. Where do you think that like comes from? Like, is it because there's a lot of, you know, fish in the region, or kind of where's that funkiness?
Well, it's there's a lot of fish in the region.
Yeah.
Mekong fish is a landlocked country, so it's a lot of fish. So we are also, the way we preserve the fish is fermenting it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it started, from how we are preserving the fish.
Mm-hmm.
So fermenting it and add it to the dishes that we cook with. For example, like tamahong, papaya salad, lap, things like that. So, and also we're not only fermenting fish, we're also fermenting meat as well, like pork,
mm-hmm.
Fermenting beef, you know, fermenting vegetables.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned fermentation as like a kind of key cooking method. Mm-hmm. What are some other cooking methods that are pretty common in Lao cuisine?
It's a lot of salad, lap, which is our Lao national dish. Lap is prepared with any proteins and use a lot of fresh vegetables. It's like a salad. And also we do a lot of grill. A lot of steam stew.
Mm-hmm.
So in Lao cooking method is quite...
it sounds healthy.
it's healthy method. It's not too much of a stir fry. We don't do a lot of wok cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of steaming in banana leaves, a lot of grill, fermenting. So it's quite healthy method of cooking. This is what we also are doing in Deep Khao as well.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you differentiate it? Like, what are some key qualities to differentiate it from Thai food? Because sometimes it gets confused, or it's currently like being sold under the Thai like name.
Yes. Well, it's been confused because it's... it wasn't presenting as Lao food.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to say example for lap. Lap is been eating from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up eating lap, and I grew up learning how to cook lap from my grandmother. So it's been in our culture, and sticky rice as well. It's been, you know, presenting it, you know, in Lao culture. So people actually have been eating that in Thai restaurants or in the Asian restaurants, but it was not known for Lao cuisine.
Yeah, and why? Yes. Why do you think that is?
Because in Lao, just like you said earlier, a lot of Lao, a lot of Thai restaurants actually running or owned by a Lao entrepreneur, Lao business. It's because of we have been going under other culture. It's because Lao food is known for funkiness.
Mm-hmm.
Lao food is known for spicy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are afraid to presenting as Lao because it's also a marketing. It's hard to market.
Mm-hmm.
So going under other culture is easier for marketing. So it's why part of this Lao food movement that we set up is encourage people to come out and, you know, be proud of our own identity, be proud of what we're growing up eating, just embrace the food, embrace the culture.
Yeah, and call it exactly for what it actually is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. So what are some things you're doing right now with the Lao food movement?
What we are doing right now, I set up a program where I... invite Lao or anyone who wants to learn about Lao food and Lao culture to come in our restaurants to shadow me or my son, and also to have them sit at the dining room to experience who's out there, who's our guests.
Yeah.
Kind of like give the encouragement, it's okay to come out as, you know, as our own identity. To be proud of it. So use Lao food, Lao restaurant as a marketing. So that's part of the program. Also, part of the program, I travel and meet as many Lao restaurant tour or any restaurant tour that would be interesting to learn my story and share the story and encourage them. So it's about promoting, encouraging, supporting the whole community.
Yeah, that's really cool. And kind of given all of the recognition and the awards, you know, you're receiving too, it seems like that is picking up and going in the right direction. That's super exciting. So what are your goals for your restaurant in the next, like, year or two? Or what other projects do you, you know, have going on?
My goal for the restaurant is inviting more guests to come in, to promoting Lao food as much as possible, encourage more people to come in and experience our dining scene, go to the kitchens. And so we are hoping to gain that confidence from different people all over the places to come in. I would love to continue doing what I love to do. This is what I make me happy. So, yeah, so I will keep continue doing what I love and embrace it and, you know, share my story to communities.
Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, we're really excited to see the Lao food movement take off.
Thank you.
So, what is, do you have any more, like, predictions as to where Lao cuisine will go in the, like, you know, popular mainstream culture and food scene?
I already seen it.
Yeah.
It's already been out there. I have seen a restaurant that has been turning into Lao as marketing. So it happens in San Francisco.
Yes. Oh, cool.
So I have seen a chef
That one called?
It was a Thai restaurant that turned into a Lao restaurant.
Oh, what a cool transformation.
So I have seen it. So I have seen people do now embrace it, now come out from, So I'm hoping to see more, more restaurateur, more chef out there to open a Lao-only restaurants instead of Lao and Thai or Lao and just be proud of who we are and be proud of our food. So, I'm seeing more and more, so I'm hoping that it will be, you know, once, you know, you talk to a friend that, you know, never meet someone new, you said about Lao food, so people recognize, oh, yeah, it's Lao food.
Yeah, that's
so
a great
instead
goal.
Of going explain further more about it, so that's what I'm hoping.
Okay, cool. That's a great goal, and we totally support that.
Thank you.
So thank you so much, Chef Tsang.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
For listeners who want to learn more about your restaurant or want to stay updated on your projects like the Lao food movement, how should they keep in touch?
Well, they can keep in touch with us through our social media, Lao Food Movement, social media, Instagram, Twitters, and also my email, sang@deepkao.com. So reach out to us.
And join the movement, everyone.
Yes.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. Here's also a quick reminder about Heritage Radio Network's Summer Drive. As you may know, this show is only possible thanks to member donations. We wouldn't be able to reach you every week without the generosity of our HRN members around the world. Join the club and keep food radio on the airwaves this summer by signing up at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. We'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.